Because on Saturday, the devil came to Pennsylvania holding a rifle, but an American lion got back up on his feet and he roared! Oh yeah! He roared!
Oh, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is 3 minutes after 6 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So great having you here, and we are broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention. And you know where we are. The heart of America, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. What an incredible convention moment last night when Donald Trump made his first public appearance following the failed assassination attempt against him on Saturday. Tim Scott, U.S. Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina, said the devil came to that rally. Well, that the devil's name was Tom Crooks, now expired. And still a lot of unanswered questions, still a lot of people need to answer for what happened and what went wrong regarding the security for President Trump on Saturday. But we'll get into that later. Again, last night was incredible. Donald Trump's first public appearance. Let's go to capture some of the audio when Donald Trump made his appearance last night. Phil, we got that?
Yep. Let's start off with the Sean Hannity narration as Trump arrives inside the Fiserv Arena, the site of the convention.
Donald Trump is making his way. You can see that he has, from the shooting, his ear was pierced. He does have that right. His ear was pierced.
Yeah. I lost.
Donald Trump is in the building.
All right. That is what it was like as he arrived. And then they began playing. Lee Greenwood was there live to play Proud to Be an American. And Trump made his way up to the designated seating area. Just, again, a huge, massive outpouring of joy and affection. And Chris Wallace, who has been covering conventions, national conventions, for over 40 years. And, of course, his dad was the legendary Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes fame. Chris Wallace, following in his father's footsteps as an NBC reporter at the time, and then, of course, migrated to Fox, now with CNN. Here is what Chris Wallace had to say last night.
Winston Churchill famously said, "Nothing in life is so exhilarating as to be shot at without effect." And you can see that today. The idea that just hours ago, a few days ago, this man, an assassin's bullet whizzed by him, hit him in the ear, inches from his temple. It'd be just by the slightest fraction of an inch, he survived, shot at without effect. And you can see the joy of this crowd. I got to tell you, as somebody who's been covering these conventions since 1964, that may have been the most electric moment I ever saw. That was quite extraordinary.
Now, that's saying something. That is saying something. Barry Goldwater was nominated, Lyndon Johnson renominated back in, 60 years ago. And for Chris Wallace, who was then just a boy, for him to say that of all the conventions he's been to over the decades, that was the most electric moment ever. It's saying a lot. I mean, put it this way. The guy who was speaking, the guy who they saw last night, for all intents and purposes, ought to be dead. But for the grace of God, and I use those words carefully, but for the grace of God, Donald Trump would not be with us. and that he was there. He had a big white bandage on his ear. Was, again, just an incredible American moment. The photograph of him defiantly thrusting his fist in the air after being raised to his feet following the attempt on his life and yelling, fight, fight, fight. That, again, is a photograph for the ages we talked about yesterday. Anyway, we've got a lot happening on the John Carlson Show. We've got a running mate for Donald Trump. We'll tell you a little bit about J.D. Vance. Now, most of you know that I had been lobbying on my program for Governor Glenn Youngkin of Virginia, who apparently finished either second or third. Trump making up his mind to go with J.D. Vance. I will tell you why I think that was. And by the way, Youngkin was there last night, gave a great speech. Speaking of speeches last night, for the first time in 120-plus years, the head of the Teamsters Union addressed the Republican National Convention. Now, there have been a couple of times, not many, a couple of times when the Teamsters have endorsed a Republican presidential candidate, Ronald Reagan back in 1980 and 84. Then there was, George H.W. Bush. Oh, Richard Nixon back in 72. That's about it. But they never spoke at the National Convention. They were invited this year. And Sean O'Brien took him up on that and gave a very powerful speech we'll get into. Changing attitudes about security. Are you ready for this? RFK, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., has been running for president for over half a year. He's probably going to be on every ballot in every state. He's a bona fide contender, getting between 10 and 15% of the vote, depending on what poll you look at. So he's legitimate. He's credible. And he hasn't been able to get Secret Service protection. Get this. He had requested it 6 times and was rejected every time. This is the nephew of John F. Kennedy, killed by an assassin. This is the son of Bobby Kennedy, killed by an assassin. He himself has received a number of threats, some of them political in nature, some of them from mentally disturbed people who say, you know, I want to take out a Kennedy. I want to be famous. And he still was not able to get Secret Service protection until yesterday. An article from John Fund in nationalreview.com, followed by a request from President Trump that Joe Biden's Secret Service please give protection to Bobby Kennedy Jr. Need I tell you that most political prognosticators have said that Bobby Kennedy was taking more votes from Joe Biden than from Donald Trump. And time after time, they refused to provide Secret Service protection to him. It took an attempted assassination of President Trump for the Biden White House to understand just how grave the situation is out there when it comes to security. And speaking of security, incredible what we are learning about, not about the shooter, about whom we know very, very little. It's increasingly strange. You know, potential assassins come in two categories. One of them is they're trying to cancel ballots with bullets. They are political terrorists. Think James Earl Ray, killed Martin Luther King. Think Sirhan Sirhan, Palestinian militant, killed Bobby Kennedy. Think Lee Harvey Oswald, communist, killed John F. Kennedy. And then there's guys like John Hinckley, who tried to kill President Reagan, who is just an oddball with mental issues. Then there was Arthur Bremer, who shot and almost killed George Wallace, shot him numerous times. Again, just a very strange guy who wanted to kill a famous politician. He had stalked Richard Nixon and then elected to shoot Wallace because Wallace was an easier target in 1972 than an incumbent president. It looks like Tom Crooks, who is all of 20 years old, was probably in the latter category. Again, very, very little is known about this guy. Here he is, 20 years old. He's a computer nerd. Reportedly, he was able to assemble, disassemble, and reassemble computers. And yet he had next to no social media footprint. Nothing on Facebook, nothing on Instagram, nothing on any of, you know, four or five dozen other social media platforms. The motive appears elusive. It doesn't matter, as far as I'm concerned. An assassin is an assassin. And I say this because this assassin was actually observed. Now, this is according to Olivia Rinaldi, CBS News. He was observed by several people acting weird. And some of the people who observed him acting weird were law enforcement. That included a sniper who observed Tom Crooks outside the building that he later was on the roof of. He was outside looking up at the roof, observing the building. And then he disappeared. And then, according to CBS, he came back. He sat down, was looking at his phone. He was acting so weird that one of the law enforcement snipers took a picture of him. And then he took out a range finder. And at that point, the sniper who took his picture radioed to the command post, and the assassin, would-be assassin, disappeared one more time, came back a third time with a backpack. The sniper called back in to update his information that this guy who had been sitting down with a rangefinder now had a backpack and was walking towards the back of the building. Eventually, a police officer, and this has now been confirmed by several law enforcement and media sources, scaled a ladder and encountered the shooter on the roof. But when the shooter turned and aimed his rifle at the officer ducked, and then went back down the ladder. And it was at that point that Tom Crooks turned and began firing. This is unbelievable. I mean, this is just perplexing that there would be so many mixed signals, missed signals here. How obvious does this have to be? And I'm wondering, why wasn't there drone surveillance of the roofs of these buildings? How hard is that? So this is what this is the reality that we are now learning, and it does not inspire confidence in the Secret Service and how they were doing their job last Saturday. You are listening to the radio program of record. Speaking of law enforcement, about 15 of them just walked past us here on Radio Row at Broadcast Central here at the National Convention in Milwaukee. So somebody important is going to be walking by in a minute or two. It's great having you along as we are now broadcasting from this historic National Convention. You are right where you need to be, the Commute with Carlson. And yes, we will be doing our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest. I'll be giving you the secret word of the morning at 8:05 this morning. Again, we will be doing the contest. Details on the trip we're offering this week a little later on as the commute rolls into third gear here on the Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J's around the corner with the social media suite. When you think of Wild One, you think of Philip J. Vandervoort III, ladies and gentlemen, with a social media sweep as we're broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, off to an incredibly energetic start. We'll talk about the president's choice for vice president a little later on. Right now it's Phil. Go for it, Phil.
Wild One, my reputation precedes me. But enough about my time on the golf course, John. Okay, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Let's get into a follow-up from something you hit on yesterday's show. This is the Seattle quote-unquote political writer at The Stranger, Ashley Nerbovig, if we're pronouncing the last name correctly.
Nerbovig.
Yeah. And a deleted post. There's a little bit more to the story now. Nerbovig had posted her thoughts that she wished the attempted assassin of Donald Trump had better aim.
Quote, and posted the phrase, "Make America aim again."
That was the post. Her entire Twitter account now has been deleted. And at first, I think it was just her tweet got deleted, but now she's deleted this entire account. And a guy who has a social media profile that says Texan in Seattle, former Amazon, former Microsoft Research, who's a fan of Bitcoin, he posted about this and said, "Hey, at Ashley Nerbovig, your tweet implies that murdering people you disagree with or even hate is justified. Perhaps you deleted your tweet out of regret, perhaps out of self-preservation. Either way, promoting violence against political opponents is the end of democracy." And that sums things up pretty well. This Texan in Seattle went on to post, her reaction is the archetype of the screeching left. You don't have to run and then hide, and I think the inference is here, delete your social media account, when truth is on your side. So what a great rebuke to that idiotic post by the stranger, but not completely unexpected stranger writer.
And can we basically cut to the chase? Mm. The left, as embodied by the stranger and by Ashley Nerbovig, mm-hmm. as a case in point, is a hate movement.
Mm-hmm.
They are sustained by and they perpetuate resentment and hate. Therefore, when you see violence that is done in the name of their ideology, It is rationalized. It is forgiven. It is praised. It is ignored. Whatever will move the movement forward. So that is how they need to be thought of. You hear about hate movements in America. There's no movement stronger, no stronger hate movement in America than the political left. Not the Democratic Party. Not standard issue liberal Democrats. We all know and love many of them. I'm talking about the political left. And Ashley Nerbevig and The Stranger are a perfect example of that.
Let's talk one more local story here. Washington State Patrol has been boosting their efforts to pick off ferry line cutters, people that are cutting into lines for the ferry boats at ferry terminals. Como 4 has been reporting on this. And I couldn't help but think when I read that headline, Washington State Patrol boosts line cutting enforcement at ferry terminals, like maybe people wouldn't be so inclined to try and cut the ferry line if there were enough ferry sailings and enough ferry workers and enough operational ferries so that they didn't have to wait so long between sailings.
Well, late Friday, guys, we
this
had
is not
many...
to condone anyone that cuts in line, but
late Friday
this
we
is
had
the problem Jay Inslee has created.
Late Friday, we had quite a few of the popular ferry routes down to one boat each, and I've always heard, and yet to confirm with State Patrol, most of the line cutting is on the west side of the Sound, coming to the mainland, to Seattle, to Edmonds, and Muckleteel. It's not so much here because of the new terminals and the way it is, and of course you got more eyes on this side of the water, Puget Sound. So.
Yeah, no, they catch you doing that on Lopez Island. I think they make you stay on the island for an entire day.
Either that or you have to swim back. You have to swim or paddle back.
Back to the end of the line. Theme from a summer place here, Milwaukee, as it turns out, the site of the Republican National Convention. We are broadcasting live, and when we come back, Joe Biden had some explaining to do about his own campaign rhetoric, and Lester Holt from NBC was asking the questions. You'll hear what he had to say, what Biden had to say in response. All right, having fun this summer day. Here we are halfway through the month of July, 16th day of July, as history made at the Republican National Convention. Donald Trump has himself a running mate, J.D. Vance. Just elected a couple of years ago to the U.S. Senate from Ohio, someone who was quite famous before he made it to the U.S. Senate. We'll be talking about him at 7:05. Right now, want to talk about what Joe Biden had to say last night. He was being interviewed by Lester Holt. And Lester Holt, NBC News, to his credit, was saying, you know, President Biden had made much in the last couple of speeches he's delivered after the attempted assassination of President Trump. He's made much of trying, to lower the temperature. We all need to lower the temperature. And Lester Holt said, well, what about some of your rhetoric? Here, have a listen.
You called your opponent an existential threat on a call a week ago. You said it's time to put Trump in the bullseye. There's some dispute about the context, but I think you appreciate that.
I didn't say crosshairs. I was talking about focus on. Look, the truth of the matter was, what I guess I was talking about at the time was, there's very little focus on Trump's agenda.
Yeah, the term is bullseye.
It was a mistake to use the word. I didn't say crosshairs. I meant bullseye. I meant focus on him. Focus on what he's doing.
Okay. Not really convincing. First of all, do I think that Joe Biden wanted violence directed at Donald Trump? No, I do not. But I do believe that the rhetoric on the Democrats' side has been more dangerous. And let me tell you why. It's not that there hasn't been extreme comments on both sides about each other's politicians and each other's parties, et cetera, et cetera. The difference is that I believe the Democrats had a concerted campaign strategy, still do, of trying to make Donald Trump not look objectionable, not look unpopular, but to look dangerous. That he is a genuine, as you have heard Joe Biden himself say, and you've heard his wife say on the campaign trail, and of course, all of his other surrogates, Kamala Harris, that Donald Trump is a genuine threat to this country's democracy. Okay? It is not a coincidence that you have the Adolf Hitler comparisons being made with increasing frequency. Just a couple of weeks ago, the New Republic, one of the oldest political magazines in America. And it's had, you know, different iterations. It used to be moderate, then it used to be liberal, then it used to be moderate again, and now it's ardently liberal. Had a cover of Donald Trump as Adolf Hitler, complete with the Hitler mustache. There was the Washington Post, famous article published late last year by one of their opinion journalists, Mike Godwin, saying, yes, go ahead and compare Trump to Hitler. Again, when they do it, they don't seem to think it's that dangerous. Well, you know what? It is that dangerous, and it is that irresponsible. We see them saying the playing the same game when it comes to race. Just casually suggesting that if you disagree with them on any number of issues relating to race, you know, affirmative action, DEI extremism, etc., that you're not wrong, you're racist. That if you object to the trans agenda, it's not because you have common sense and you're basing your opinion on basic biology. It's because you're a bigot. It's because you're a hater. The people who hate are the ones who often are the first to throw out the accusation of the people they disagree with being hateful. So this is the reality that I don't think the Democrats are prepared to acknowledge. By the way, speaking of extremism, the mayor of Aberdeen, Mayor Orr, has now done a 180 and is apologizing. A lot of heat he's taken for suggesting that the attempted assassination of Donald Trump on Saturday afternoon was all staged. Here, have a listen.
You probably saw a lot of people posting their opinions or their hot takes about the assassination attempt, but here in the city of Aberdeen, the town's mayor said it may have been staged and looked like something that was a pro wrestling stunt. Today he told me it was a stupid comment and he understands the blowback. Aberdeen Mayor Douglas Orr's phone is ringing nonstop.
Unfortunately, I can't take it away and have it never show up again.
The calls are about this post on his personal Facebook page that has now put Aberdeen in headlines across the globe. The mayor floated the possibility that the assassination attempt of former President Donald Trump was staged and suggested it may have been done to get sympathy votes.
Do you disavow what you said in the post? And
well, that's not for me to say. I just suggested that somebody look into it.
But you can see why. You know, if you have somebody here, people who say that's an egregious error in judgment to float sort of a conspiracy theory very early on when you're the mayor.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I, whether I think it's true or not, that's really not, that doesn't really matter. The idea is that I shouldn't have said it.
Okay, Aberdeen, your mayor's an idiot. And, I mean, it's one thing to be extreme, but if you're extreme and dumb at the same time, you get very, very annoying very quickly. This guy won election by a grand total of 4 votes. This elections have consequences. Let's hope they understand the recall. The recall option there in Grays Harbor County in the city of Aberdeen. All right, we take a quick break and then are joined by our good buddy Lars Larson right around the corner of the Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. If Lars Larson knew that Bobby Hatfield of the Righteous Brothers singing this liner, "You've Lost That Lovin' Feelin'," is from Wisconsin, the very state that we are broadcasting from this morning.
I did not know that.
See, and I always thought you were an intellectual. So, I guess not. How are you doing this morning, Lars?
I'm doing very well this morning, John. I want to know what you think about the choice of J.D. Vance.
Well, I'm going to be talking about that next hour.
Okay.
My first choice was Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia.
Very good choice.
Yes, because he's younger than Donald Trump, but older than J.D. Vance.
Yep.
Almost everyone here at the convention is. but anyway, I liked Governor Youngkin because he's got executive experience. He's seasoned. He has proven appeal in the suburbs. And I think he would have put the state Virginia into play. He actually would have brought a state along with him if he was on the ticket. Now, Trump might end up winning Virginia anyway. The momentum here just gets better and better, bigger and bigger, Lars.
Are they looking – have you looked at all of the poll numbers out of New York State, which normally people like you and me don't even look at because it's not in play? The poll numbers seem to indicate that New York, believe it or not, could be in play. And why? Well, take a look at, you know, at what's happened. You've got a population in New York that's seen up close and personal the policies of the Democrats and how little they regard they have for citizens and their needs. They've thrown citizens under the bus and you don't see any real pushback from the largely Democrat leadership of New York. Same problem that Oregon and Washington have.
This is how you know when things are going well as opposed to things not going so well for a political party and their candidate. When they start adding states to the possibility of pickups, that's a good sign. And so the Trump campaign months ago, they added Nevada to their list.
Right.
Now they've added New Hampshire. Now they are adding Minnesota to their list. Now they're adding the state of Maine. And again, these were all states that were added before the attempted assassination of President Trump on Saturday. So this is when you know things are moving in your direction. Again, even before the attempt on Donald Trump's life, even before the debate where Joe Biden deflated faster than the Wicked Witch of the West and the Wizard of Oz at the end of the movie, even before all that, the momentum was moving in this direction, Lars.
And it's going to continue moving that direction, too. And I think people are going to look at Donald Trump and they're going to see a strong leader. I mean, I hate to go to just optics in politics, but think about the optics. A man shot in the head. He got hit in the ear, but that's part of your head. He came within, you know, with a fractions of an inch of being dead. And what does he
yes.
do? He rises to his feet, puts his fist in the air,
yeah.
and says, "Fight." Now, I contrast that with a guy who can barely make it down the stairs from the 12-inch high platform that they did the debate on just a couple of weeks ago. That is a dramatic contrast, and it isn't fixed by Joe Biden telling Lester Holt last night, "Well, he's only a few years younger than me." Maybe chronologically he is, but
right.
but physiologically and mentally, Donald Trump is a couple of decades younger than Joe Biden.
Yeah, I mean, there's no real comparison. You know, on that. And the other thing, is that the reception that Donald Trump got last night. Remember, this is the first public appearance he's made since the assassination attempt on Saturday.
Yep.
Was just rapturous. Chris Wallace, no fan of Donald Trump, to say the least, said it is the most powerful electric moment he has witnessed at a convention, and he's been to literally dozens of them since the 60s.
And has any piece of the lawfare against Donald Trump really stayed intact? The attempt to bankrupt him failed. A judge knocked it down. Another judge throws out one entire case as being completely illegal, and not just illegal, but unconstitutional. That'll be appealed, but it'll happen after the election. All these pieces are falling apart.
I guess the next president will have to decide whether to continue that lawsuit.
You think?
That case, rather. Yes, it certainly is. Lars Larson, our noon to three host here, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When we come back, J.D. Vance, everything you need to know about him, and Congressman Jim Jordan making a surprise appearance on the John Carlson Show in about 5 minutes here on The Commute with Carlson. You know something, radio legend Mark Christopher?
Yes.
I've been looking all over Milwaukee, and I haven't found the Schatz Brewery yet. So I'm beginning to wonder if they were on the level on that show, Laverne and Shirley.
Watching the RNC here in TV last night, I keep seeing reference to, you know, more than cheese, more than this. And I got to say, too, Donald Trump last night, former President Trump, boy, talk about a calm and just laid back. And I had a tear actually in my eye looking at his family and his son with a tear in the eye when he entered that whole thing. I mean, it was just a
great moment.
Oh, my gosh, what history. And just, again, with my daughters watching all this unfold, and what a time for America here. So
You noticed what I noticed. Donald Trump's first public appearance since the attempt on his life on Saturday, and he was just received with such warmth. I mean, just bathed in applause, and sometimes you can tell when ovation goes from respect and excitement to just genuine affection.
It just that humble look. And even Karen was sitting there going, man, have you ever seen a look of Donald Trump like this? And I'm like, no, I never have. It just,
great
wow.
Point. Donald Trump was actually moved.
Yeah.
He was taken aback. And there was a side of him there that I think a lot of people, well, and you're one of them, Mark, hadn't seen before. And you saw the tear in his eye, the tear in his family's eyes, as they were seeing how people reacted to his first public appearance since we almost lost him on Saturday afternoon. Welcome, everybody, to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, the 16th day of July. We are broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention. Two huge moments of this convention. We've just been talking about one of them, the reception for President Trump. And the second was the drama leading up to his choice yesterday afternoon of Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan's going to be joining us here in about 15 minutes on The Commute with Carlson. But his choice of J.D. Vance, who is also from the Ohio delegation, as Jim Jordan is. But J.D. Vance is U.S. Senator, elected just a couple of years ago. He is also the youngest nominee to be vice president. Let's see if Jeff Posula down there. Jeff Posula, an walking encyclopedia of politics. Do you know who the youngest VP was before Jim Jordan? Richard Nixon.
J.D. Vance. You got to keep saying J.D. Vance, baby.
J.D. Vance. It was Richard Nixon. He was tapped by Ike to be his running mate back in 1952. When Richard Nixon was, I think he was just 38 years old. So J.D. Vance is 39, and most of you know that I was pushing big time for Governor Youngkin not because I opposed any of the other major choices, but because I was just so high on the fact that Youngkin was a conservative who had proven appeal in the suburbs and managed to win an election in not just a purple state, but actually a blue-leaning state, which is what Virginia has become in the last 10 years or so, as more and more government employees and people who make their living, you know, government contractors and the like, live in Northern Virginia. I think that he would have put the state of Virginia into play. And so that's why I was a big booster for Youngkin. It was not to be. Youngkin spoke last night, gave a great speech, a powerful speech. But J.D. Vance has had a fascinating life. He wrote a book, a good one, a best-selling book, Hillbilly Elegy, which I have read, and I hope all of you have the chance to read, about life growing up in Middleton, Ohio, which is Appalachia. It's hillbilly country. Think, you know, Kentucky, Ohio, that area of the country. And his life was tough. We'll get into that in a moment. But he wanted to go to college. No way he could afford to go to college. No way anyone in his family could send him to college. So he did what a lot of young people do. He enlisted in the Marines and served with great distinction and managed to make his way to Ohio State University, which, you know, first in his family to make it to college, and thrived and excelled and made it all the way to Yale Law School, where he graduated with honors and then went on to make some money in the Bay Area, helping to finance companies, venture capitalists, helping to finance upstart, new start companies, and then went into politics and has been an extremely influential and energetic young Donald Trump conservative. Now, it wasn't always that way. 8 years ago, he was not a fan of Donald Trump's. And made that abundantly clear a number of times, and you'll be hearing all about that from his critics throughout the campaign, that a lot of people who ended up becoming fans of Donald Trump didn't used to be. And J.D. Vance was one of them. And then J.D. Vance not only became a supporter of Donald Trump, but embraced his movement. So why did Trump choose him? Here's my theory. Donald Trump, despite the fact that he has been wealthy almost all of his life, has always wanted the Republican Party to be more of a working class party. And this is where J.D. Vance really stands out. J.D. Vance understands struggle. And I don't mean the kind of struggle where, you know, politicians are, you know, trying to show they are from humble origins when they're really not. You know, think Kamala Harris trying to portray herself as a little girl who helped integrate her local elementary school, which, by the way, was not true. She was a part of a school busing program, but it was because they were busing for diversity, not for integration. The school had been integrated before she was even born. But again, they tried to play up this narrative. She's the daughter of two college professors, for crying out loud. J.D. Vance grew up in borderline squalor, serious drug and alcohol issues in his family, among his closest family, including his mom. it is his grandma, or as he calls her, Mama, that he credits with keeping him from sliding into that same pit of desolation and decline and early death. So this is someone who really knows what life is like on the other side, as Johnny Rivers would say, on the other side of town. He is the kind of American who's regularly looked down upon by elites. And the kind of person who, frankly, the Democratic Party used to care about. Working class, making their, you know, people who were working class making their living from natural resources. You know, think loggers, think people who work in the energy industry, coal miners, you know, oil rig workers, pipeline workers and the like. I mean, these are the, you know, people who work in factories. These are people that the Democratic Party used to represent. And Ohio and Kentucky used to vote accordingly. But then that stopped. And we won't get into why it stopped. That's a long conversation, but it stopped. And J.D. Vance wants to give people like him, when he was younger, a voice. And so that explains his appeal. Young, incredibly smart, and not just academically smart, but street smart. And someone who is very quick. I can't wait to see the vice presidential debate. That's going to be fun between he and Kamala Harris. But beyond that, I think that Trump is thinking long term about this movement of making the Republican Party a working class party. And J.D. Vance is a person who is dedicated to making that happen. Anyway, in a few moments, we will be joined by someone who knows J.D. Vance very well. Like J.D. Vance, who again is from Ohio and continues to live in Ohio, Jim Jordan is from Ohio and, of course, has been in Congress, one of the more influential, powerful members of Congress. He's going to be joining us, and a friend of J.D. Vance, joining us to tell you what you need to know about him. Coming right up on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It just occurred to me that Donald Trump is actually, he's not a baby boomer. He's a little bit older than a baby boomer. And J.D. Vance is not, also not a baby boomer. He's too young to be a baby boomer. He's a, not even a Gen Xer. I think he's a millennial. So, what an age range there between Donald Trump in his late 70s and J.D. Vance in his late 30s. We'll be talking with a member of Congress from J.D. Vance's home state of Ohio, Jim Jordan, here in just a minute. I wanted to relate an interesting anecdote here that explains the predicament that a lot of Democrats find themselves in. Now, this was three people, all of whom I know. One of them is a business leader. The other is a former Democratic legislator. And the third is a current elected official in King County, Democrat, who were having lunch together. And they were talking about the attempted assassination of Donald Trump, as just about every American has been talking about. And again, we're talking a former Democratic legislator and a current Democratic elected official. And they were saying, can you believe how Trump came across after this attempt on his life? They said, for crying out loud, he looks like a superhero. And, yeah. That is the picture I think a lot of people had. They were contrasting how Trump comes across compared with, well, how their nominee, Joe Biden, comes across. And the fact that this attempt on Donald Trump's life has probably made it more difficult now for the movement to replace Biden as the nominee to succeed. So the attempt on Donald Trump's life, the failed assassination, was actually making it more likely that the Democrats are going to be stuck with what they got. And that is exactly, you know, what you had an election that was already moving against them. Even before the debate, the election was moving against them. And then here comes here comes Donald Trump literally rising, getting to his feet and rallying the crowd after a bullet had just narrowly, literally by an inch or less, would have ended his life. And instead, he's instantly pumping up the crowd and motivating them. So morale not very high right now in Democratic Party circles. That can change. Well, you know, it's a long way before the election. But this is what how things look at this point. And by the way, speaking of working class, we're talking about how J.D. Vance is the next generation of Donald Trump's attempt to make the Republican Party more of a working class party. Last night, for the first time in its history, the president of the Teamsters Union actually showed up and was invited, of course, and spoke. In fact, he was the last speaker of the evening at the Republican National Convention. It is the first time a Teamsters president has addressed a Republican convention in 120 years. That and, you know, Amber Rose, the model, former girlfriend of several, you know, rap artists and entrepreneur, would have been two of the completely unexpected speakers, surprises. But that's how it ended up emerging. It is 7:25, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We are broadcasting live from the National Convention in Milwaukee. And a reminder, yes, we are doing the Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. Now, here's what's going to happen in about 40 minutes. I'm going to give you a word of the day. And when I do, please text that word to 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. You'll be entered for an immediate drawing for a gift card to Daniel's Steakhouse, Daniel's Broiler Steakhouses, all four of their locations. And then we will be having an end-of-the-week drawing for a trip to Mexico. And I'm talking about,
gotta bring that down a level. I've been looking all over for our Mexico music, John.
Seven.
Oh, here's another one.
Cruise. A seven-night cruise. That will include stops in Mazatlan and Cabo. So all this going to be part of the take the trip, or you can keep $3,000 cash. That is completely up to you. So let us know what you want to do. Also coming up here on the Commute with Carlson, did you guys check and see what on earth is going on with the Morning Joe program? For the first time in its history, the Morning Joe show was pulled off the air yesterday. Obviously, this being the first broadcast day of the week.
Yeah, they were not allowed on the air yesterday. They were allowed on the air today, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. They are back on the air. But why were they pulled off? And I got answers for you coming up at 7:35.
Should we just break a little bit early, John? Because it sounds like you're waiting for the Ohio Senator Jim Jordan to sit down and talk with you.
He's a few feet away right now,
okay.
Just making his way here. And
or do so we want to see if he'll sit down here in the next few seconds?
Do we have him in the next 30 seconds, or will it be a few minutes? 30 seconds. Okay, in 30 seconds, Congressman Jordan.
Then let's keep it in Milwaukee, John.
So, John, real quick, I just want to know, after all the work first day, you and Zach producing, what'd you do? Did you stay put? Did you go out and play? Did you have a look around there in Milwaukee?
Did you stick around for the speeches and speakers last night?
Listeners in the know.
I stuck around for a while, and then I headed back to the flop house we're all hanging out at. And Zach stayed for everything going on. Congressman Jim Jordan, it is so great.
Good to be with you.
You
bet. Thanks to you. Thanks for having me.
Quick question. Does the name Larry Owings ring a bell?
I know that name, sure. Because right. so does Coach Gable, right?
Exactly. The only wrestler from the UW to beat Dan Gable.
Yeah, I've watched that match on tape, of course. It was like a 13-11 match. They were like scrambling all over the mat. 1970 NCAA Finals.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
I think it was 1970. Yeah, I think so.
I should point out the Congressman.
Do you wrestle?
Jordan used to.
Yeah.
Congressman Jordan is two-time NCAA champion.
Long time ago. Wrestling. Yeah.
So wrestling of a different kind going on. I've got to ask you, as a longtime friend of J.D. Vance, someone who's known him for a while, tell the people of Seattle, the greater Seattle area, what they need to know about J.D. Vance that they haven't heard yet.
Well, I mean, I think the key is it's the American story. You know, a kid from humble beginnings is now on the ticket. I think he's going to be the next vice president of the greatest country in history. Just amazing in his book, best-selling book, Hillbilly Elegy, is just a fascinating read. If your listeners haven't read it, they should. It's one of those once you start reading, you don't want to put it down.
And true story, they made a movie of it.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is important is, there's the old line in life: it never hurts to have smart people in charge. And JD is just a sharp guy, but has those just basic values and principles that I think make our country special. So I think is a great pick by President Trump. President Trump's a sharp guy too. I think it's an amazing ticket.
Youngest choice to be VP, I think, since Richard Nixon back in 1952. I think Nixon was 38.
I haven't done the research there, but JD's a young guy, and there's nothing wrong with that because he's also a sharp guy and an accomplished guy.
Now the other side's going to say, yeah, young, too young.
Wow.
What do you say to that?
No, I mean, look at his anyone who doubts it, watch his performance a week ago Sunday on Meet the Press when they were throwing tough questions at him, and he handled it like a pro. He's a good man, right values, good family.
The other thing is not only the American dream. Again, my guest, Congressman Jim Jordan, is that he understands struggle. American families are struggling right now.
Yep.
Nobody in politics understands struggle more than J.D. Vance.
Yeah, well said. And you're right. You think about take your family out to dinner. See what it costs you. Like the cost of everything right now under the crazy Biden policies is, you're right. And I think, again, that plus from a political standpoint, you know, all the experts will tell you that they think this race is going to be decided Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. So it never hurts to have a Midwesterner, particularly a Midwesterner like Senator Vance, I think, on the ticket out there campaigning. So I think that's helpful, too.
Congressman, I know you've got to go. I appreciate you going out of your way to make some time here for
us. You bet. Thank you.
On KVI Radio. It's great seeing you.
Good to see you. Always got time to do an interview with a guy who knows some wrestling.
All right. We will return un momento of the John Carlson Show. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Well, you get opportunities like this, boom, they just happen. So it was great to catch a few minutes with one of the most influential members of Congress, who was the perfect guy to talk to about J.D. Vance, as Jim Jordan is a longtime friend of his. And, they're both from Ohio. There's a lot of excitement, as there always is when you see a rising star elevated, someone who's working his way, through up the ladder, and then all of a sudden, boom, gets put on the ultimate ladder of success, presidential ticket. You are listening to The Commute with Carlson. We wanted...
As you say, John, I got to ask about Jim Jordan in your interview.
Yeah.
Was he wearing a sport coat, or was he just wearing the dress shirt and the tie? Because every time I see him on a C-SPAN video feed in committee, whatever, he's no sport coat, no suit jacket. He's just got the dress shirt and the tie going.
Same thing.
Good.
Sticking with it.
Cool.
Same blue shirt, same tie.
Okay. I had to ask.
What you see is what you get. I wanted to go over a couple of interesting trends that we're seeing here, which is just... again, revealing about where we are. Young voters appear to be drifting. They were very reliably conservative, or excuse me, very reliably Democratic, and supportive of the Democratic Party ticket, young voters under 30. But now they appear to be moving. For instance, in 2016, that's when it was Trump versus Hillary, 51% of young men identified as Democrat. That's the voters under 30. 51% of young men identified as Democrat. Now, it's not 51%. It's 39%. Gallup has been conducting this party poll for a long time. And so this trend is something that they've not seen before. We've seen that kind of steady movement. But it just looks like voters that had been taken for granted as reliably Democratic voters are not going to be reliably Democratic voters this year. And we see the same trend with Hispanic voters. We see the same trend with African American voters. The American Black American voters are still going to vote. A majority will vote for Biden, but an unprecedented number might be moving toward Trump. Again,
can I play a clip for you, John? Because I had something that
voters.
Relates to this about Black voters. This is Lawrence Jones from Fox and Friends, Fox News. Mm-hmm. And he was interviewing a woman in Wisconsin, a Black woman, asked her why she will vote for Trump in this election. And here's what she said. She's a resident of Milwaukee.
Why would you be supporting Donald Trump?
For change. We've had Democratic control in Milwaukee for the last 65 years, and we haven't gotten anything. And so it's like you can't keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. We have to do something different.
So that seems to dovetail exactly into what you're talking about. I was going to use that on one of the social media sweeps if possible, but I think it fits perfectly into what you were just hitting on.
Well, and last week we played that focus group that Jon Stewart, the Daily Show, did with six black voters, and they were asked, you know, who are you supporting for president? And the guy, who it wasn't Jon Stewart, it was one
Johnson
of the reporters.
Was the correspondent,
Josh Johnson.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Josh Johnson immediately expressed surprise that three of the six said they were voting for Trump.
Even split, right.
And then he's asking, well, why are you supporting Trump? And we heard the same theme, change. You know, this ain't working. It hasn't been working for a long time. And we keep believing when they tell us, oh, the other side is far worse. The other side is not on your side. The other side will not help you. The Republican's not going to help you. And they said, you know what? We're tired of hearing that.
And then John James is the politician from Michigan. He tried to run for Senate, U.S. Senate, and he didn't win. He came real close, right?
He came real close, and he's running for statewide office again in Michigan.
Yeah, and he spoke last night at the convention, and he said something to the effect of, you know, inner cities, black neighborhoods are infected with crime. Illegal aliens get more assistance and help from Democrats in 4 days than African-Americans or blacks do in America. And he was pointing to those reasons as why do black voters continue to support Democrats when the support is not reciprocated?
There again, some if you look at the cities where things are most bleak, let me just name three literally off the top of my head, Baltimore, Chicago, and Detroit. Though, believe it or not, Detroit is actually now on an upswing. But Baltimore and Chicago, Philadelphia, Detroit, these are all one-party ruled states or one-party ruled cities.
Yeah, just like you heard the gal from Milwaukee just say.
And yet this is where things are toughest, are, you know, poorest, are most dangerous. And so, again, you're not going to see Donald Trump win the majority. But if he were to take 20%, first of all, that cracks the Democrats' coalition apart. And secondly, it would be more than any Republican candidate. Think about this now. More than any Republican candidate has gotten in 60 years. 60 years. It's just crazy.
So is this strictly related to Trump, or is this the confluence of events that Trump is a little bit different than past Republicans, and then Democrats are not delivering on their promises to black
voters?
It
is both. It is both. Yeah. It is both. Number one, think Mitt Romney. Okay, think Mitt Romney. Things weren't going great for black voters in 2012. Does Mitt Romney look like someone who empathized with them? Is Mitt Romney someone whose policies were, you know, directed to help them? Probably not. You know, they didn't think, you know, this guy would empathize with someone like me. Trump seems to have connected with larger numbers of voters, of traditionally Democrat voters, traditionally blue-collar voters who lean Democrat, rising numbers of Hispanic and black voters who remember how things were in the Trump economy, and they compare Trump with now, and they say, I'll take Trump over what we have now. So this is why this is an historic election, and this is why this ticket matters so much. There's a whole lot going on, and one of the things that did not go on yesterday was the Morning Joe show, and it wasn't because of technical difficulties. We will tell you what kept MSN, one of the most popular shows on one of the least popular cable networks, MSNBC, what kept their show off the air yesterday right after this. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, live from Milwaukee, site of the Republican National Convention. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, right where you need to be, and we're right where we need to be, broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee for the balance of the week. Big news last night, of course, as we now have a ticket, not just a candidate. Donald Trump will be running with Senator J.D. Vance out of Ohio. We've told you about him already. We'll be telling you a little bit more about him next hour. I had a great conversation with a friend and colleague of his, Jim Jordan, congressman from the same state of Ohio. And, of course, Donald Trump's first public appearance since the attempt on his life on Saturday, and just a massive, huge outpouring of genuine affection, rapturous applause and ovations that went on for quite some time. But there was one media outlet that was not broadcasting yesterday, at least one show on one media outlet, on what I call one of the most popular shows on one of the least popular networks, MSNBC, a strong liberal bias, and the Morning Joe show gives the name to that bias. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, both ardently pro-Biden, both Democrats now, were not on the air. And you would think, well, it must have been technical difficulties. It wasn't technical difficulties. NBC just didn't trust them. And if that sounds odd, just 2 days after an attempt on President Trump's life, that they would take that view, here's their statement. Given the gravity and complexity of this unfolding story, NBC News, NBC News Now, and MSNBC have remained in rolling breaking news coverage since Saturday evening. As we continue to cover this story into the week, the networks will continue to cross simulcast, alternating between NBC News, NBC News Now, and MSNBC reports. So there is one news feed featuring this developing situation. Okay, that doesn't make sense. Why would you have the same thing running on three of your stations when MSNBC is there to be a show that doesn't report news, it discusses and comments on news? Well, a person familiar with the situation told CNN that NBC canceled their broadcast yesterday, quote, to avoid a scenario in which one of the show's stable of two dozen plus guests might make an inappropriate comment on live television that could be used to assail the program and the network as a whole, close quote, after the attempt on Donald Trump's life. In other words, they don't trust their own staff. They don't trust their own hosts to maintain a level of professionalism, and they don't trust their own reporters on the Morning Joe show. Now, they're back on the air today, but that tells you volume about that show. We can't trust our own on-air personalities to maintain what we need here. Anyway, hour number three of the John Carlson Show, right around the corner, Talk Radio 570 KVI. You didn't think we forgot our contest, did you? Of course not, ladies and gentlemen. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yeah, we're flying by the seat of our pants, as you always do when you're covering a live event and things are happening around you. However, every day at this time, all summer long, we take time out to give you our secret word of the day for our major contest of the summer. Every week we give away a trip. This week the trip is to Mexico. Okay, here's what I am talking about. 7-night cruise to Mexico with balcony cabin. Stops in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan with $500 spending cash. Again, that is our end of the week drawing, and a drawing today for a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card. So all you need to do to enter the contest for both drawings is text the word I'm about to give you to this number, 206-421-5757. Just that simple, 206-421-5757. The word that you are to text to that number is pool. Pool. The cruise you're going on includes a ship with a couple of pools. Let's just leave the S off. Pool, P-O-O-L. Just that simple. Pool. Text it to 206-421-5757, and you're in for the daily drawing, and you're in for the end of the week. You have until 9 o'clock to do it, so you have the balance of the hour, 55 minutes. So don't text and drive. Take your time. And then keep in mind, we have three more words at three different times today at 11 o'clock during the Mark Lean Van Camp show. We'll have our secret word of the 11 o'clock hour. At 1 o'clock during Lars Larson show, we'll have another word. And then at Ari's show during the 4 o'clock hour, same story. Now, here's the deal. Again, you can enter just once a day if you want, like right now, or you can enter four times a day, four separate drawings. Think of it as a big raffle. So that is what we have coming your way. We want to thank our partners of this contest. That would be Quinault Beach Resort and Casino. Fabulous place, by the way. It is right off the main drag to Ocean Shores. Quinault Beach Resort and Casino, Ocean Shores. Check it out and enjoy. All right? So that's your word, pool. And your number is 206-421-5757. A lot going on here, the commute with Carlson. The excitement, of course, with Trump's first public appearance last night at the convention hall since the attempt on his life Saturday. The choice of J.D. Vance as his running mate. There's almost, my goodness, J.D. Vance is 39 years of age. Again, the youngest nominee for vice president since Richard Nixon back in 1952 when General Eisenhower chose him to be his running mate. And he is quite literally half of Trump's age. He's 39 years of age. But, man, what a life. I mean, one of the best received and best-selling nonfiction books when it came out about 10 years ago, Hillbilly Elegy, which I really recommend you read if you haven't. If you really want a great, thoughtful, penetrating, compelling look into what life is like in America's lower than lower class. I mean, he grew up in a totally dysfunctional environment. But he was also brilliant and chronicled that life and writes about it with great empathy and great thoughtfulness. The book was very well received and eventually made his way. Couldn't afford college was out of the question. No one around his family ever went to college anyway. But he did. There were no scholarships or anything, so he joined the Marines and used money from the Marines, the GI Bill, to go to the Ohio State University. Man, you got to be careful when you're in the Midwest to say that one correctly, the Ohio State University. He excelled there, made his way to Yale Law School, and a successful business career, then turned to politics. He is half Donald Trump's age, but he sees life much the same way, has the same view, overall view and political philosophy as President Trump. So that is what has been going on. The other side issue that has alarmed a lot of people is just what on earth was going on at the scene of the rally on Saturday, where the man who wanted to end Donald Trump's life and ended up killing someone else, slightly wounding President Trump and more seriously wounding another person, was observed not just by people, but by one of the snipers working the event. Saw the would-be shooter, Tom Crooks, at that time would-be shooter. He was outside looking up at the roof, kind of observing it, and then he disappeared. Then they noticed him come back and sit down looking at his smartphone. And at that point, he was beginning to arouse suspicions, so one of the snipers actually took a picture of him. And then he took out a rangefinder, and at that point, the sniper who took his picture radioed to the command post, "Hey, this is what I'm seeing here," at which point the 20-year-old man, Tom Crooks, disappeared again and then came back a third time, this time carrying a backpack. So the sniper who called in the earlier report called in an update and said, yeah, this guy I've been telling you about with the rangefinder, he's now got a backpack and he's walking towards the back of this building. And then, of course, we've had the account, which has now been validated by the local sheriff, that a police officer ended up following up on the tip and walked up the ladder within the building to the roof, where he did encounter Tom Crooks with a rifle on the roof. And Crooks turned and aimed the rifle at him, and the officer ducked and then went back down the ladder. And at that time, it is thought that Crooks turned and fired and nearly killed Donald Trump. Jeff Poggiola, who, of course, is senior news correspondent, popular podcast, joins us here on the John Carlson Show.
Well, I don't think the show is nearly as popular as yours. Yes. But
however, I've got to ask, what are you making of this side story that's developing at Butler, Pennsylvania?
Well, my first thought is, how much of this are we able to verify through multiple sources? And
Olivia Rinaldi, CBS News.
No, I get that, but like, I mean, there's. Each detail that comes out, it starts to build a narrative, and then how you piece all of that together is where you get the full story is the big question.
Yeah, the full story is I'm just left wondering what the hell.
Yeah,
I mean they
it's clearly a failure on law enforcement to allow someone to get that close to the president. Certainly with a weapon. That's the biggest challenge.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you the same question I asked you yesterday.
Okay.
All right. You've done a lot of, you've been to a bunch of conventions before. Mm-hmm. Your take after the first night of this convention?
Well, briefly, I'd say that Donald Trump certainly energized the crowd last night with that surprise appearance. This could change the campaign for him, I think. he got teary-eyed. That's the most vulnerable I've ever seen him, most emotions I've ever seen him as he came out. He didn't give a speech, but it could set the tone for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, and he has said that his convention speech is different now.
Yes, they've been rewriting it since Saturday. That's something that the campaign's been doing for quite some time.
And what has the reaction been outside Republican circles with the naming of J.D. Vance to the ticket?
Well, that's kind of hard to say because we're all kind of inside the bubble, as it were, here in the convention.
So
it's
literally
a little difficult.
And
it's
not easy to get out of this bubble sometimes. So. Anyway, Jeff Pogula, I know you're an incredibly busy guy this week, so we're going to try and touch base with you at least once each show.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
It is coming up here on 15 Minutes After 8, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Ari Hoffman, if it is possible, on the fly, I wanted to ask you real quickly your take on J.D. Vance as Trump's running mate.
I think he's great. I think he's fantastic. He's a rookie. But he knows how the Senate works, I hope, at this point. And he follows through on what he says. I like all the things he says. My concern is a long-term concern. Whereas if J.D. Vance is now the vice president, which looks like, please God, I don't want to jinx it, but that looks like the direction we're heading in, then you have an open Senate seat. And now you have the Democrats running for an open Senate seat with all the money that the donors have held in reserve because they think Joe Biden can't win, which now they can use to get a Senate seat. And we don't know how close the Senate is going to be. So do we lose a Senate seat? I know people keep saying Ohio's red, Ohio's red, Ohio's red. Well, we thought Georgia might be red, or we thought other states were red. I don't want to see a repeat of getting Warnock because it happens afterwards and then people are running
Raphael
against Trump.
Warnock from Georgia.
Exactly.
Elected when the Republicans were divided, embittered, and a lot of them just didn't show up to vote.
Exactly. And if you think about it this way, they'll also be running against Donald Trump. And by then, the election's over. All the sympathy's gone for any attempted assassination, anything. The knives will be out. The bullseyes will be on them, to use Joe Biden's language. And that's what you have to deal with. So I'm concerned for that reason. Aside from that, I think it's a great ticket.
Do you think that the overall strategy that the Democrats had of portraying Donald Trump not just as objectionable and someone who's, you know, not on your side, but someone who's a genuine threat to the country itself, a threat to democracy, which was an ongoing meme. This is what they were determined to do. Do you think that has been thrown off?
I think it horribly backfired. I mean, sorry to use those words, but it really came back to bite them. Because they had banked this whole thing on he's a threat, he's a threat, he's a threat, he's a threat. And now he's under threat. And everybody says, well, you've been calling him a Nazi. What do you expect to happen? You call somebody Hitler, somebody's going to try Project Valkyrie, Operation Valkyrie. That's exactly what happened. And you have to look around at the rhetoric that's going on here. Now, mind you, I have a different theory on the shooter. I worked with kids for a long, long time. And I think this kid was a loner. I think this kid was somebody who wanted notoriety, as we see with some mass shooters, wanted his name in lights because nobody liked him very much because he was bullied. That's not a sympathetic thing. It's just the facts of life. But at the same time, why did he focus his vitriol on Donald Trump? Because that's whose name is everywhere. And he probably thought he could get popular with some people who are the ones who are the most anti-Trump.
Yeah, it's you're the first person to really, you know, get into trying to make sense of this young man, of this shooter, because there doesn't appear to be a political agenda at work.
No.
He didn't, you know, lack for support, you know, at home. He's from a two-parent family. He was a math whiz. He was a computer whiz. He used to disassemble and reassemble computers.
Mm-hmm.
So he had gifts. But what on earth would consume someone do something like this?
Look at some of the other stories. I'm putting all this together just from my years of working with teenagers. He wasn't allowed in the rifle club because they thought he was a liability. They thought he was dangerous.
Well, they thought it was because he wasn't a good enough shot.
Exactly. They thought because it was both. It was a whole pile of these, depending on, let's assume all these reports are accurate. So the kid wanted to be in the rifle club. The kid wanted to be popular, and he was bullied. And I'm not this is not a sympathetic thing. This is the facts of life. And he became a very lonely kid and didn't have any social media that we can find so far. I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's a conspiracy theory, whatever the case may be. I usually find that incompetence accounts for a lot of these conspiracy theories. And what we're seeing happen right now with the Secret Service, with the local police, I mean, we're seeing the effects of the defund the police movement where you're not getting the best ones. We're seeing the effects of DEI. You're seeing all these things combined along with this kid who we don't know very much about. And I think one of the reasons you don't know very much about him is because he had no friends. He had no social circle. He had nothing, and this was the way he was going to get notoriety. We have a thing on my show. We don't name shooters, ever. We never talk about them. Because I've read these books about how a lot of these guys want to see their name in lights and want to see the notoriety, and I don't want to give it to them.
Right. No, that is my general rule as well. The only reason his name has come up on this show is when we are talking about his movements and people reporting, and his name is come up there because, again, I cannot understand how they could have had sight on him for 26 minutes by one account and not have confronted him.
So
they encountered him and then pulled back, giving him time to shoot.
My guess is we're going to find out after this that the right people didn't have walkie-talkies, that the right people were on the wrong channel, that the right people didn't do it. That's what we're going to find out.
All right. Ari Hoffman from 3 to 6 this afternoon. Again, lots of stuff breaking out all the time here in Milwaukee at the National Convention. Philip J. Vandervoort III is right around the corner with his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists, and at 8:35, John Fund, nationalreview.com, who probably knows as much about politics as anybody in the country. It's a busy day on the commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 5. So there's my buddy Ari Hoffman interviewing Lee Greenwood, who, of course, sang God Bless the USA as President Trump was making his first public appearance since the attempt on his life 72 hours before. You'll be hearing that interview during Ari's show this afternoon. Right now you're hearing Philip J. Vandervoort III telling us the latest social media mess here.
Yeah.
Social media from socialists.
Let's make it a bit of a hybrid since we didn't get one in last hour while you were talking to Jim Jordan. And I've got so much stacked up here, the social media sweep. Sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, J.D. Vance is the Trump pick for vice president. J.D. Vance was speaking about that phone call he received from Donald Trump inviting him to be on the ticket as vice president. Here's J.D. Vance telling that story about that phone call with Trump to Sean Hannity.
You know, I just tried to enjoy the ride. What an honor to be considered. If it had been Senator Rubio, obviously Mark is a good guy. He's a good friend. So I try to just have a good attitude about it. You know, my family's very excited, obviously asking a lot of questions. I will say, Sean, I hope I'm not betraying too many confidences here, but when the president called me today to actually formally offer me to become, you know, the vice presidential nominee, which just sounds crazy, my son, my 7-year-old son, was sort of making noise in the background. You know, I'm getting so embarrassed. It's like, oh my God, Donald Trump's asking me to be his vice president.
So the phone rings, he calls you, and you're like, okay, this is the call, or maybe not the call.
Or maybe it's a bad call, right? It's the call. Who knows whether it's good or bad. But then he actually has me put my 7-year-old son on the phone. You think about this. Everything that's happened, the guy just got shot at a couple of days ago, and he takes the time to talk to my 7-year-old. It's a moment I'll never forget.
Pretty crazy story, but that goes against the legacy, you know, media, national news media portrayal of Trump, doesn't it?
But you know what? That's so Trump. For those of us who know his life and career, that is exactly what you would expect Donald Trump to do. Yeah. I'm sorry, sir. It's my 7-year-old son. Well, put him on.
Yeah, talk to him.
I can see that.
The Seattle Times posted a story that says customers of Seattle City Light will pay more for electricity in the coming years than originally forecast as the public utility struggles with increased demand. Here's how much more rates will increase, and the story is paywalled. But the question has to come up. It says Seattle City Light rates to increase as utility struggles with supply and demand. Is this increased demand due to the proliferation of charging electric vehicles in the city? And if that's the case, then a lot of politicians around here have some questions to answer about this natural gas ban that has been set up that will be voted on in I-2066 come November. So that's, I think, another significant question about this reliance on electricity based on Seattle City light rates. And it's going to make it more expensive for everybody living in Seattle. Scott Adams is
this
the...
This would be the perfect... that would make this the perfect time to phase out natural gas.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah. Go figure. Go figure. Scott Adams is the creator of Dilbert, who likes to talk politics. And he posted this about the suspected attempted assassin of Donald Trump. He posted, "Can we make voting machines as secure as the shooter's phone?" And this is the cell phone belonging to Thomas Crooks that the FBI has finally managed to unlock and seem to be searching for any clues that might explain what motive lies in this attempted assassination of Donald Trump. And then finally, here's our socialist on social media. And this is one for the New York Manhattan media elite. The New Yorker magazine has posted its cover of its latest issue, and it is Supreme Court justices, six of whom all have Donald Trump's head on the Supreme Court justice robes, and then the three others as Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. Yeah. And one person I follow on social media is responding to this saying, "Amy Coney Barrett literally wrote the dissent explaining why hundreds of January 6th rioters were properly charged with obstruction. And on that ruling, Ketanji Brown Jackson took the opposing view. I'm so tired of reductive nonsense like the New Yorker cover below. It just makes us dumber." Yeah, and there's another example of this whole political attack on Donald Trump that is simply not based in reality.
Yeah. Now then, you know, they're almost becoming a caricature.
Boom. That's a good way to sum it up.
They've just become a caricature. It is coming up here, 8:31, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We come back. John Fund, one of the most astute and influential political observers in the country. Now NationalReview.com is going to be joining us. He might be the reason, John Fund might be the reason, that Bobby Kennedy Jr. just now, as of yesterday, received Secret Service protection after he was turned down for it half a dozen times. The son of a man killed by a political assassin turned down for Secret Service protection. And we're back on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 22 minutes to 9 o'clock already. Man, oh, man. we have our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest going on right now. A trip to Mexico or $3,000 cash. If we draw your name at the end of the week, if you want to get in that drawing, it is the simplest contest in the world to enter. All you have to do is text the word pool, P-O-O-L. Just text the word pool to 206-421-5757. That's our regular call-in, our regular text line, 206-421-5757. And you have until 9 o'clock to do it. You have over 20 minutes, so take your time. It's not a race. And you are entered into the end of the week drawing that we are having here with KVI and our Lotus Radio partners. The contest is sponsored by our friends at Quinault Beach Resort and Casino. That's Quinault Beach Resort and Casino, which is at Ocean Shores, right on the around the corner from the main drag. Great place. So check it out. And again, there will be three other opportunities with three other words, secret words, at 11 o'clock, at 1 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock during Ari Hoffman's show. Okay. Congress would love to get some answers about what on earth went wrong on Saturday when it came to protecting Donald Trump.
at his rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. By now, of course, you all know that a completely inexperienced gunman managed to get up to the roof of a building just 130 yards away, which anyone who's been in the Army knows that, you know, a rifle shot from 130 yards, particularly if you have a scope, is, it's not hard to hit a target as big as a person. And yet, somehow, drone surveillance did not identify this guy early on. And yet, this was pawned off as outside the perimeter of the Secret Service. And as is being reported by CBS News and NBC, a number of people saw a man acting very strange, very weird, and reported him to local law enforcement. A sniper actually took his picture, and then after taking his picture, noticed that he was using a range finder while he was out on the lawn in front of the building surveying the roof. So here he is looking at the roof of the building outside while everyone is, you know, focused on the rally in front of them. And when he saw the guy with the rangefinder, he reported that in, and then he disappeared and eventually fired off, they believe, between 6 and 8 shots. One man, of course, Corey Comporator, former fire chief, killed while shielding his family from the gunfire, the highest calling of any man, which is to protect your wife and children. That's what he died doing, Corey Comporator. Let us hope his name is remembered. Because that's genuine heroism at work. And then secondly, we have the fact that he was encountered, not confronted, but encountered man-to-man, the shooter, man-to-man was encountered by a police officer who walked up the ladder inside the building of where this guy was on the roof. And when the guy turned and pointed the rifle at the officer, who was, I guess, at a disadvantage, couldn't draw his weapon, ducked and headed back down the ladder. And that is when the gunman is believed to have turned and fired several shots. Congress now wants a complete list of all law enforcement personnel, federal and local, who had roles in protecting President Trump at that rally. They want all audio and video recordings in the Secret Service's possession related to his campaign rally. They want any memorandum or notice that was issued by the director to Secret Service personnel regarding the assassination attempt on President Trump. They also want all documents and communications related to the Secret Service protection for the Trump rally last Saturday, and all internal documents, including text messages and email between the Secret Service and Department of Homeland Security. Basically, they want it all. They want all maps, all aerial views, diagrams, assessments. They want all surveillance data. They want to find out what happened and why. And you know what? There needs to be some not the needs to be some accountability, and people need to be held responsible for what happened, because this is not how the candidate protection bureau of the federal government is supposed to be operating in a country like this. I mean, this is it's just stunning how long this guy was acting the way he was last Saturday, this gunman, and was allowed to continue. I mean, the bottom line is, for heaven's sake, was there no drone that was keeping an eye on this guy overhead? I mean, how difficult was all this? So I'm glad Congress is jumping into this, and I don't think this is partisan in any way, shape, or form. I think any reasonable person, whether they're Democrat, Republican, in between, whether they're political or not, frankly, are going to want to get some answers about the inexplicable decisions not to get much more aggressive much, much earlier with this guy. It is coming up here on 47 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We are coming to you live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, turning out to be a historic national convention. We are in the right place at the right time. And don't worry, Ari Hoffman will continue this afternoon his show from 3 to 6. Also, just a quick reminder, once again, that word of the day, or the word of the hour anyway, for our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest is POOL, P-O-O-L. That's POOL, P-O-O-L. Text it before 9 this morning to 206-421-5757. Minutes to 9 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So you want to know a little more about J.D. Vance? One great guy to talk to about this would be Congressman Jim Jordan from the same state of Ohio where J.D. Vance grew up and now represents in the United States Senate. Here's a portion of our conversation earlier today.
Quick question. Does the name Larry Owings ring a bell?
I know that name, all sure, because right. so does Coach Gable, right?
Exactly. The only wrestler from the UW to beat Dan Gable.
Yeah, I've watched that match on tape, of course. It was like a 13-11 match. They were like scrambling all over the mat. 1970 NCAA Finals.
Wow, yeah. Okay. Yep.
I think it was 1970, yeah, I think so.
I should point out that Congressman...
Do you wrestle?
Jordan used to.
Yeah.
Congressman Jordan is two-time NCAA champion.
Long time ago, yeah.
So, wrestling of a different kind going on. I've got to ask you, as a longtime friend of J.D. Vance, someone who's known him for a while, tell the people of Seattle, the greater Seattle area, what they need to know about J.D. Vance that they haven't heard yet.
Well, I mean, I think the key is it's the American story. You know, a kid from humble beginnings is now on the ticket. I think he's going to be the next vice president of the greatest country in history. Just amazing in his book, best-selling book, Hillbilly Elegy, is just a fascinating read. If your listeners haven't read it, they should. It's one of those once you start reading, you don't want to put it down.
And a true story, and they made a movie of it.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is important is. You know, there's the old line in life, it never hurts to have smart people in charge. And J.D. is just a sharp guy. A sharp guy, but has those, just basic values and principles that I think make our country special. So I think is a great pick by President Trump. President Trump's a sharp guy, too. I think it's an amazing ticket.
Youngest choice to be VP, I think, since Richard Nixon back in 1952. I think Nixon was 38.
I haven't done the research there, but J.D.'s a young guy. And there's nothing wrong with that because he's also a sharp guy and an accomplished guy.
Now, the other side's going to say, young, too young.
Wow.
What do you say to that?
No, I mean, look at his... Anyone who doubts it, watch his performance a week ago Sunday on Meet the Press when they were throwing tough questions at him, and he handled it like a pro. No, he's a good man, right values, good family.
The other thing is, he's not only the American dream. Again, my guest, Congressman Jim Jordan, is that...
He understands struggle. American families are struggling right now.
Yep.
Nobody in politics understands struggle more than J.D. Vance. And Congressman Jordan agreed with that sentiment. It's going to be an exciting race, and there's a lot more coming your way from this historic week in Milwaukee Republican National Convention. Get out there, enjoy the day, and make sure you're listening to Ari 3 to 6, Talk Radio 570 KVI this afternoon.